All right, well, I want to start tonight by talking about how we argue. And I want you to understand something as we're getting ready to go into the second round of speeches. Eliphaz is going to start again. So, you know, we've gone through each of these three guys, each of these three comforters, talking to Job, setting out the system. They've set out tradition. They've set out cause and effect, natural law, karma, as we would call it. And Job has rebutted them each and every time. So you see, you've got two sides, right? You got fighting. And what's the central issue? Job claims that he is what?
Righteous.
Innocent and righteous, yes. But yet he is suffering. So there's this major conflict between the world system at that time, which by the way still exists today, that says if you suffer, you must be guilty. You are reaping what you're sowing. There is no such thing as innocent suffering. And then there's Job on the right hand that says, I'm innocent and I'm suffering. You can't have those two ideas mesh. You understand that? So the system is at war against Job's system, which, by the way, is God's system. So let's talk about how we respond. You are having an argument with your spouse. Okay? So get the image here. A discussion. We'll say. And your spouse makes a good point that you don't want to deal with or admit. What do you do?
Change
you can. What else do we do? What else do we do?
Storm out.
Storm out, change the subject. What else? We get louder? Get meaner? Do what? Well, that's the smart thing. That's a different story. Most people don't do that. So. But we react. Do what? That's right. Yeah, that's right. We do something back to them. Well, this is your fault. Occasionally? Okay.
Well, I mean, it's not always. Not always wrong.
No. But here's the thing. We understand what's going on there, and you see how we battle. And it doesn't just have to be husband and wife. It can be anybody. Let me ask you this. Have you ever had anybody tell you that an idea that you had, something you just said, was a dangerous idea? Ooh, that's scary. That's dangerous. You're going to get people in trouble if you keep talking like that. Anybody ever heard that one? What would you do if you heard that? If somebody said, you're out there talking to somebody, and somebody says, Keith, that's a dangerous idea. What do you think? What are you going to do? Are you going to defend it more?
Well, if I said it, hopefully I believe in it, so I'm going to defend it.
Mm-hmm.
Stand up for it.
Do you think we would defend it and argue for it more if we really believed in it versus it was somebody says a dangerous idea and we didn't really believe in it?
I'd like to know why.
Yeah, that's what I see.
Do you want to know why it's a dangerous idea? Okay, all right, that's fair. Okay. Okay, that is a dangerous idea. You start talking politics today, you start talking about secession today, you can talk race relations today, you can talk about all kinds of things today, and people have their entrenched sides, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think fill in the blank needs to be elected because fill in the blank. And the response you get from either side will be... Hope that translates well. It just, you know, it'll be kind of vociferous and angry. So this is what's going on now. Job has put out his position, and remember the concepts he's raised already. I need a mediator. I need to talk to God. I can be righteous before God, but it's through Him. I know that I'm going to see God in my flesh. I'm going to be resurrected. And here's his three guys saying, man, I don't know what you're saying. So Eliphaz is going to elevate his argument today. And that's where we are. So turn to Job chapter 15. But I want you to think as we go through and we read this, is this the way you would respond? Because it's going to get, I call this one No More Mr. Nice Guy. And you may think back on Eliphaz's first speech. And Eliphaz, if you remember, he was like, you know, we're sorry. He started out really nice, the way most people start out their arguments. You know, I don't want to say anything critical. What's my next word?
But
yep. So I don't want to say anything critical, but here I go. But now he's going to drop all those pretenses this time. He's going to just lambaste Job. And I want you to pay attention to why he lambastes Job. Think about the questions I ask you to start out with. And we're going to go through each of these arguments, and you'll see that he really starts insulting Job, and he tells him that his words are dangerous. That the idea that the innocent can suffer is dangerous. All right? Now, we're going to talk about that at the end of tonight. But that is his premise. Your system, this God that you're talking to, this God that you're talking about, who you obviously don't know, and of course we know God says he does, would never permit innocent suffering. So what's going on? What's underlying all of this? That's the question for tonight. So here we go, Job chapter 15. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, "Should a wise man answer with empty knowledge and fill himself with the east wind? Should he reason with unprofitable talk or by speeches with which he can do no good?" So look at verse 2 and 3. He says, Job, your words are empty. They got nothing. And we remember, God says, Job knows me. And worse than that being empty, you're just a bag of wind. You fill yourself with the east wind. Your talk, verse 3, is unprofitable and does no good. It has no basis in reality. So this idea that you're talking about, first of all, you see, Eliphaz is pushing back. Oh, no, 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 no. You can't be right. Your words are empty. Suffering has to be cause and effect. Suffering has to be the way we believe it is. So you see, do you see him starting to defend his position? All right. Look in verse 4. "Yes, you cast off fear, you act without fear, and you restrain prayer before God." And what this means is, that first part is, your words are dangerous. You're casting off fear, you are acting against the proper way to talk to God. Now, who set the proper way to talk to God? Well, okay, that was a bad question. Who set the, quote, proper way, according to Eliphaz, to talk to God? Eliphaz and his friends. Does Job know how to talk to God? Yes. How do we talk? Is there a special way today that we have to talk to God? No. Can you do it with your eyes open? Closed? Kneeling? Laying down? Sitting down? Walking? Driving? Okay. So what he says is, Job, what you're saying is dangerous. And what it would do, according to him, is it would eliminate fear. What's the basis of Christian faith? Is it fear? It's love. What's the basis of the world system? Fear. Y'all see? Y'all starting to see the conflict now? Why do we, according to the world system, why do we obey God? Because we're afraid of losing the benefits. We're afraid of losing God's favor if we don't obey. Versus the Christian says, I obey God because I love Him and I appreciate what He did for me. Completely different. Which one's stronger? Yeah. Which one's, can fear be strong? Yeah, it can. Fear's not lasting. Fear can be almost as strong as love, but you won't keep doing something out of fear. Love, you will keep doing something out of. Long, long time. This is what's going on. He says, you're casting off fear. You're saying, you're basically ignoring the way that we pray before God because you are saying that we shouldn't be afraid of God. And he's not talking about reverential fear. He's talking about trembling fear. Because what does God do according to Eliphaz and his buddies? God punishes the wicked and rewards the righteous. And therefore, if you are being punished, you should fear God because you are wicked. So he's jumped right into this right off the bat. So verses 5 and 6. For your iniquity teaches your mouth, and you choose the tongue of the crafty. Your own mouth condemns you, not I. Yes, your own lips testify against you. So here he's telling Job that his own words are crafty, and he's trying to justify himself. So he says, you know, your own mouth gets you in trouble. I can hear what you're saying. Your own words condemn you. I just have to listen. And what you're saying makes no sense. You're trying to be crafty. You're trying to say it's not my fault. I didn't do anything, and I'm not guilty. So he's telling, what's he basically telling Job that Job is? Well, guilty, but a liar too, right? And that he's working with word games to come up with a way that doesn't make him look bad. Y'all ever tried to justify a sin that you committed? Or a stupid decision? Let's just go there. I really needed that car because. Or I really needed to eat those chocolate-covered cherries because. They were, yeah. Oh, wow, I need to use that one. So, see, y'all ever do that? Oh, come on now.
We can't waste food.
No, we can't. Back when I went to school, they would always, if you wouldn't clean your plate, they would say, can you think about all the starving children in Africa and throw that food away? And I, a couple of times, said, well, we can send it to them. And yeah, they didn't appreciate that, but that probably wasn't the smart thing to say. That was not the smart thing to say. But you see what he's saying? He's like, look, you're just being crafty. It gets even worse in verse 7 to 10. He says, are you the first man who was born? Do you think you were the first? Or were you made before the hills? Have you heard the counsel of God? Do you limit wisdom to yourself? Are you the only one that you think really knows what's going on? What do you know that we don't know? And remember, this is not an actual question. This is an insult. What do you know that we don't know? Right? What do you understand that's not in us? Both the gray-haired and the aged are among us, much older than your father. So what did he just do? He pulled out the age card. I know better than you because I'm older than you and my hair is gray. Let me tell you. Being older and being gray-headed does not equal wisdom necessarily. It can, but it doesn't. There's an old song that I used to like in the 70s. It says, while some grow wiser, you just grew older. Kind of an insult there too. But that's what he's telling Job. He's like, look, you're arrogant. You think you're something. And listen to what he says, though, in verse 7. I love this, verse 7 and 8, because we know what's getting ready to happen. Eliphaz will be there when Job has counsel with God, and God will say, where were you when I made the hills? But watch what he says. Are you the first man who was ever born? Where were you when the hills were made? Have you heard the counsel of God? Job's getting ready to go, uh-huh, I have. But that's what Eliphaz is doing. He thinks he is going to be able to just tell Job that he's arrogant, that he thinks he knows everything, and he thinks he has some type of special knowledge. And you should defer to your elders because they know best. We know the system. So look in verses 11 to 13. He says, are the consolations of God too small for you? In other words, is what God does too small for you and the word spoken gently with you? Now, who spoke the word gently with Job, according to Eliphaz? They did. You think the things that they've said to him have been gentle? That's what they thought. They thought it was. So he says, are the consolations of God too small for you? Are the words spoken gently with you? Why does your heart carry you away? And what do your eyes wink at that you can turn your spirit against God and let such words go out of your mouth? So he's telling Job here that his words, that Job's words are hurtful. Y'all ever tried to throw a guilt trip on somebody? You get in an argument, then the guilt trip comes. Well, that's what Eliphaz is doing. You didn't appreciate when we brought God's word to you. You didn't appreciate that we came and spoke gently to you, so now I'm going to lambaste you. I mean, your heart is carried so far away, your spirit's against God, and you're letting crazy things come out of your mouth. You're turning against us, and you're telling us we don't know what we're talking about. We're the old men. We're the gray-headed people. And you've just lost it. So not very comforting at all, right? Number one. But get the attack. So we can step back before we turn to verse 14. Well, let's do verse 14. Verse 14 to 16. He says, what is a man that he could be pure? Now remember, Job has claimed that he will be able to stand in front of God in his own body. Right? When God calls him from the grave. Remember that from last week? And Eliphaz's point is, no. What is a man that he could be pure, and he who is born of a woman that he could be righteous? If God puts no trust in his saints and the heavens are not pure in his sight, how much less man who is abominable and filthy, who drinks iniquity like water? Who's saying, who sins every day just like he drinks water. We all drink water. We all sin every day. So Eliphaz is going, how in the world do you think that you could be pure enough to stand before God? Now, do you hear that question in religion today? You do. And what's the world's answer? Let's start with this. What's our answer? That's the world's answer. What's our answer first? How can we be pure enough? There's three guys standing at the gates of heaven. Okay? They just got there. They're waiting on St. Peter to, that doesn't really happen, but they're waiting on St. Peter to open the gates. And the first guy turns around and says, well, you know, I donated millions of dollars. I was the lead charity giver in my church. And he turns around and says, what'd you do? He goes, well, I was just better than most people. I was a good man. I look at my neighbors and I didn't sin nearly as much as they did. And they look at the third guy and the third guy goes, well, I didn't do that and I sinned a lot, but I put my faith in Jesus Christ. Which one of those men gets into heaven?
The last one.
Which one of those men is pure enough to stand before God?
The last one.
Why? Yes. Yes. So God had somehow planted this idea in Job's mind that he could be righteous enough through this mediator. Remember? You got to start putting everything together. Job's doing it, and it's like pulling teeth. It's going slow. But think, he doesn't have the Bible. He doesn't have any part of the Bible. Right? He's putting this together from his interaction with God, and he's like, you know, I understand there's going to be a meeting. I know I'm going to see God. I know that I am a sinner, but I know that He can forgive those. I know that I can stand before Him, and I know that one day I am going to stand before Him in my flesh. And that's blowing Eliphaz's mind, and it's making Eliphaz mad. Because under Eliphaz's system, only the pure, only the righteous get to heaven, which is a true statement, right? But Eliphaz's definition of the pure and righteous is wrong.
The people with the tassels.
Yes, the people with the tassels. You understand what he's saying? Eliphaz is saying those who have done enough, those who have done the right things, those who have been righteous in their own strength, those who have done the things that the system says. And the system says what? We work our way to heaven. It's all works-based. You see that? So this is the first confrontation between works-based philosophy, and that's one of the reasons we want to sing that. Free grace. We talked about that last week. Job brings up the idea that we can be given grace freely last week. How in the world would he think that? How in the world would the system think that? Today's system doesn't think that. Today's system, turn over to Romans chapter 6. Here's what the world thinks about that free grace system. What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Paul's answer, certainly not. And actually what Paul says, if you translate it literally, is no, may it never be. So the world thinks if we have this free grace system, that the fear of God is gone. That sound familiar? Like Eliphaz? If we could just go sin and God's going to forgive us of every sin, then how would we act? Well, no. Let's see. What did you say, Joe?
Maybe act worse.
That's the premise of the system, right? Because under the system, if we don't have fear, we don't have anything. Because we won't trust God anymore. We won't put our faith, our quote, faith in God because we won't fear Him that way. Now, what happens when we put our faith in God? Do we have the ability to commit any sin and be forgiven? You have believed in God. You are eternally secure in His hands. We say that, but let's think about what that means. I leave here tonight and I go shoot somebody. Am I saved? Yes or no?
Yes.
I am. Okay. I go out and I lie tonight. Am I saved?
Yes.
All right. Do you understand under the system? What happens to me under the system if I go out? If I go out and Eliphaz and I go out and we're going to go down the street to wherever. And we get off the trash heap, we go to get something to eat, and there's a fight, and I kill somebody in that fight. Eliphaz watches. In Eliphaz's mind, what just happened to me?
Oh, you're condemned.
I'm condemned. Why?
Because you killed somebody.
Because I'm wicked. Yeah. So that is the conflict that he is having, and what you'll see as we keep working on is he gets more and more aggressive about it, and I think it's because Job is making some points with him. When you read it, why the change? Yeah, I get tired of hearing Job say he's innocent. I get that. But something happened to Eliphaz that made him get more aggressive. And that happens when we get our ideas challenged. The more our ideas, something we hold really true, gets challenged, we will fight back harder. Sure. Oh, yes. But it's deeper than that. Everything in his life is built on the system. Everything he said, everything the other two boys have said, is built on the system. What happens if that system comes down?
The lives are going to go down.
Yeah, their whole... I mean, literally, you've heard the phrase, pull the rug out from under somebody. That's what's happening to him. And God's going to pull this rug out from under them. And Job is the instrument that God is using to pull the rug out from these three guys who think that the system works every time. Y'all with me so far? Everybody with me? Okay, good. All right, so let's remember where he's at. Now, let's go back to one other question. So let's talk about sin. When I become a Christian, I can go out and I can sin. I can do anything I want to do and know that I am eternally secure. But if I have really become a Christian... what changes? Right. You see the difference? Yes. If we have really become a Christian, if we have really put our faith in God, like we talked about this morning, by believing that He is, by understanding that He is our Creator, Sustainer, our Life Giver, that He died for us, that He's our Master, then we are not going to want to do the things that we used to want to do. So if I go out there and say, tonight, I can go out and do anything I want to, that's true. But my want to better be different. If I am a Christian, my want to should be different. All right. Now, God may stop me if I've got a plan to go do something He don't want me to do. But my want to will definitely be different. So always remember that. So free grace, we talk about free grace. And you see what Paul wrote. That's the counter to free grace today. It's the same thing Eliphaz was saying. Man, if you're right, if you're going to be pure enough to see God with all the bad things you've done, there's something wrong. That can't be right. It's against my system because I know what God does. Right? Eliphaz was a man of tradition, investigation. We saw that in his first one. And he's going to talk, beginning in verse 17, about all the things he's seen and all the things these older people have told him. He says, I will tell you, hear me, what I have seen I will declare. What wise men have told, not hiding anything received from their fathers, to whom alone the land was given and no alien passed through them. The wicked man, all right, so that's his premise, is I'm going to tell you all the stuff that the old men have told me. It's been passed down. I'm going to tell you everything that I've seen because it's right. And you're going to listen. Y'all ever said that to you? And you're going to listen. All right? And here's the first thing he tells them. He's going to talk about the wicked man in verse 20 to 24. He says, the wicked man writhes with pain all of his days. Therefore, Job, you who are writhing in pain are wicked. And the number of his years is hidden from the oppressor. Dreadful sounds are in his ears. In prosperity, the destroyer comes upon him. So the destroyer comes when the wicked man is prospering. Is that true all the time? Nope. In prosperity, the destroyer comes upon him. He does not believe that he will return from darkness. He thinks he's so far gone, for a sword is waiting for him. He wanders about for bread, saying, where is it? He knows that a day of darkness is ready at hand. Trouble and anguish make him afraid. They overpower him like a king ready for battle. So this wicked man that Eliphaz is talking about, and of course he's referring to Job, is full of dread, distress, and anguish. He's thinking about his doom all the time. He's looking around. He's like, I can't come up with food. But that's what happens to the wicked. And Job, that's what's happening to you, buddy. So you need to remember, I'm right. Here we go. He's going to talk next about the fate of the wicked. Let's look at verse 25. For the wicked stretches out his hand against God and acts defiantly against the Almighty. All right, so he stretches out, and this is actually talking about going into a fight with God. He says he arrogantly challenges God to a fight and acts defiantly against him. Would we ever say, come on, God, I want to fight? We would never say that, would we? All right, let me ask you this. Would we ever say, God, I know what your word says, but it's the same thing. It's just sugar-coated words. We're telling God, I'm acting defiantly against you. I'm going to fight you on this. Just like, Jonas, you may not remember the first time you got in trouble with your parents, but the first time, they didn't teach you to do something wrong. You know, it comes out of our nature, and we are defiant by nature. We're going to defy our parents. We're going to defy the school principals. We're going to defy teachers. We're going to defy those in charge. It's just kind of what human nature is. And it's because we think we know better. All right? But he's saying, Job, you've gone so far as you're stretching out your hand against God. Because remember, Job invited God into a courtroom. God, let's come on. Let's put our cases, let's put our evidence on. Pretty bold thing to do, wasn't it? Eliphaz thought so. Eliphaz thought that was just horrible. Yet God says, come, let us reason together. That reason is, let's have a legal argument. That's exactly what God invites us to do. So then he says in verse 26, he's running stubbornly. The wicked man is running stubbornly against God with his strong embossed shield. So he thinks this shield is going to protect him against God. Though he has covered his face with his fatness, that's a polite way of saying he now has a double chin, and he made his waist heavy with fat. So this guy who thinks he's a great soldier, a great arguer, has challenged God, and when he shows up for the fight, he's out of shape. Okay? He's out of shape because he's got a double chin and he's got a too much girth around his waist. Then let's talk more about him. He says, he dwells in desolate cities, in houses that no one inhabits, which are destined to become ruin. He will not become rich, nor will his wealth continue, nor will his possessions overspread the earth. He will not depart from darkness. The flame will dry out his branches, and by the breath of his mouth he will go away. So he's not going to have lasting prosperity. The wicked person. The wicked person cannot prosper. And we know that is simply not true. Okay? And the corollary, the inverse is the righteous person will always prosper. And we definitely know that's not true, right? All right, so he's saying in verse 31, let him not trust in futile things, deceiving himself, for futility will be his reward. It will be accomplished before his time, and his branch will not be green. So he's like, no matter what you look like in your youth, you're not going to bear fruit. He will shake off his unripe grape like a vine and cast off his blossom like an olive tree. For the company of hypocrites will be barren. He's going to associate with evil people. And fire will consume the tents of bribery. They conceive trouble and bring forth futility. Their womb prepares deceit. So what he's basically saying is, you wicked people, y'all hang together. And you're going to go down together. And wickedness begets wickedness. The womb of the wicked begets what? The wicked. So wicked ideas, wicked words, wicked thoughts beget wicked thoughts and ideas. So he's saying, look, Job, all your stuff, all these things you're saying, they're empty, they're dangerous because they leave the world system, the rule that has to apply out of it. And frankly, what Eliphaz is saying leaves God out of it. But let's go back to the question. Why in the world would Eliphaz be opposed to somebody who is innocent suffering? We can end on that. We'll end the recording on that question. I want you to think about this. That's the question. Why does Eliphaz oppose innocent suffering so bad? There's got to be a reason.